You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. We're talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for black girl nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I'm your host along with Ryan this week. We have an incredible two-part episode for you. In our very first segment, we are interviewing some of the team behind the very popular series X-Men 97. That includes Jake Castorina, Emmy Yonmura, and Chase Conley. Jake is the supervising producer and supervising director. Emmy is director of episodes 103, 105, 107, and 109. And Chase is director of episodes 102, 104, and 106. Ryan is interviewing Jake in a solo interview, and Emmy and Chase are paired together in an interview with Ryan in our first segment. In our second segment, as per usual, we have our recaps, and we are recapping episode 5 of X-Men 97, which was a tough one. I want to say something that I did not add in episode 5. Episode 5 was a really tough one for me because one of my favorite characters of all time, well, next to Storm, of course, is Gambit. And Gambit has a very significant trajectory that happens in episode 5. Spoilers ahead and spoiler alert, Gambit's character dies at the end of the episode. I don't talk about it much in our recap, so I just want to make it very clear that I am probably in denial and don't really want to address it much, but I don't think that he is gone. I think he is coming back. I don't think he's completely removed from the X-Men universe. I just don't think that's happening. Maybe it is denial. Maybe it is something that is going on, some crazy hubris in my head. But I do not think that Gambit is gone from X-Men 97. So, just want to make that clear because it wasn't ever addressed in our recap. And that is my personal feelings on that. But, without further ado, let's get to it. First segment up with the X-Men team on X-Men 97 in interviews with Ryan, and then in our second segment, we do our recap breakdown. It's all about X-Men 97 here on the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this X-Men 97-filled episode.
I am Ryan Bennett with Black Girl Nerds. How you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great.
So excited to talk to you guys. I don't know like how famous you guys feel right now, but man, if these five episodes have been an insane roller coaster for X-Men fans. So I just want to thank you guys personally. It's just been a blast to kind of check it out and get into this world. Emmy, I want to start with you first. Like, what does it take to direct the X-Men? Like, are we talking Danger Room, Magneto making you a special coffee? Like, what are we talking about?
We are. You know, I think it's even in my Slack title. I just call myself a cat wrangler. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot of juggling. But what is absolutely fantastic is our entire crew, our fans, you know. So What I love then is everybody's input comes from a place of, I love this character. I love this storyline. I love this frame. I love this splash page that, you know, it actually ends up becoming quite a pleasure and very easy to wrangle these cats. I love it. And it's actually like, while it's always going to be ups and downs with teamwork, best team ever.
Yeah, you can feel it. Like, even though it's animated, I don't even know how to describe it. You can just feel the connection between the cast and the crew. You know, even though it's 2D, you know, 2D animation, it's just amazing. Chase, I want to kind of go to you to kind of kick it off on like these badass women that are part of the X-Men, right? you have two episodes where you're dealing with Storm. And I was like, boohoo cry, like, no, like how much you got into, you know, the story here with Storm and where you take her. But what is that conversation like with Allison Smith, the OG coming back? Like, what is that conversation about how you're going to take the path and involve Storm?
I mean, interesting enough, I think she just picked up where she left off. There's not much coaching excellence. You know, I think from her first read, when she came back, it was just like, yeah, that's it. You know, so it was just kind of plug and play, you know? Yeah. So we're really just trying to live up to the expectations of the OG cast, honestly, that way we're making sure that we are, you know, true torchbearers as far as that goes, and to try to deliver something with the same level of potency. And, you know, as far as even with that, you know, we've always said that we are trying to make the show that we remember it as. And so, you know, that's really the key for us. And especially with Storm, it's like now we have, first off, we shout out to our entire amazing team. So everybody kind of just does their part in making everything amazing, you know. So, you know, we start off with good scripts, and then we have great board artists, and it goes on, so on and so on. So, yeah, you know, like I said, she picks up where she picked up right where she left off. And it is devastating to see that, because we identify a Storm as a goddess, like all of us, not just us as the fans, but the people in the Marvel universe as a whole, you know. So she's that is how she's revered. And so it's always going to be painful seeing her. I wouldn't use the word reduced. I would say in a different point in her life, you know, as she tries to navigate that. So we handle that with care as well. And to try to make it as relatable as possible.
Yeah, Storm is always a fighter. So while I was boohooing, I was here for it, because I was like, I just want to see what she does, and I just want to see the evolution continue. Emmy, speaking of another goddess here, Jennifer Grey, I got to touch on that before we run out of time. Can you kind of take us to talking with Jennifer Hale, you know, just the headspace that she's in, you know, to then bring in a doppelganger from Madeline Pryor in episode 3 was just fantastic. How did you kind of navigate that?
Oh, she, you know, we have a wonderful voice director, Meredith Lane, who works with her so closely. But as soon as Jennifer was in the booth, I mean, she was nailing every line. She really embodied it. And, you know, I think one of my favorite moments was we were still kind of working out some of episode 3, especially like the messages, the tone one bring, what brings Madeline home, you know, to find her own self-identity. And it was with Nathan, right? So really it was an episode also about, you know, not just sisterhood, but motherhood, you know, because she, you know, I never wanted it to feel like Jean and her had to be at odds, because that's, you know, I don't like the stereotype of women being pitted against each other.
Yeah.
But I loved that Jennifer just brought this very gentle human side to both characters. And I knew we nailed something when the ending information about Nathan, with Madeline realizing Nathan is her identity, you know, her soul. Watching Jennifer tear up and cry in the booth just let me know that we were doing something right, you know. So having her almost confirm and bring those emotions to the episode was just such a beautiful cherry on top of the cake.
Well, listen, as the emotions continue, we stay on this roller coaster with you guys. I can't believe it's only been 5 episodes. Like, this is insane. What do you guys, like, just to kind of wrap this up, what can you throw out? Emmy, I'll go back to you first. What can you guys throw out about, like, your hopes for just going forward, that you hope the fans take? Because you guys know all the secrets, all the spoilers. So what can you throw? What kind of tease words can you throw out for us?
You know, our crew, our fans too. And we, you know, we understand the emotional roller coaster, because, you know, we've been going through it on our show as well. You know, that going through first season, reading those scripts, we went through the same roller coaster that all the fans are on. And I think I would just say, you know, stick with us. It's a very fun ride, and we're there with you guys.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that. I'll second all of that. And to know that, you know, we are absolutely handling this show with the utmost care, because we really care, we're really fans, and it is truly trying to elevate what was already there while honoring everything that was already there. And so that's really been our mission statement from the beginning. And, you know, we just kind of want to make sure that everybody knows that, and that we are going to continue to play with your emotions, because that's what we do.
Listen, we feel that. I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't wait. I'm excited. I appreciate you guys so much for the time. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
Nerds, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Listen, I'm glad to be here to talk to you because I've been telling, like, I wanted to make sure the cast and crew knew you guys are killing it. This is absolutely amazing. This is what we needed as X-Men fans. So I've been having a good time checking this out. And I can't believe it's been only 5 episodes.
Right. It's like both how are we already here and how is it only this?
Exactly. I want to kind of break down a little bit of the characters with you if I could, just as far as like their style and their look. I'm curious, when you guys are storyboarding, like, how do you come up with, okay, Storm is going to rock the mohawk, but it's going to be a little longer in the bag. You know, you bring in Mojo, maybe he looks like he hit up the gym, you know, a couple times. You know, you have the comics in the back. You know, of course, we got the comics, but how do you guys decide, like, what do you want, like, each character to be built and styled?
Sure. That's a great question. So it doesn't fall on one sort of, you know, department or onus of a person. It falls on everybody. So it starts, you know, obviously with a script and that's the Storm Mohawk, which we, now that we've seen, you know, Life, Death, Part One, that was in the vision and, you know, the mission statement and the scripts from Bo's vision from like day one. So, and the funny thing to say is now, like, that storyline has been staring you guys in the face the whole time. And y'all wanted to crap on the Mohawk. Now you understand why. So, and then, you know, once we understand where we're going to go with story and what the character that's going to entail for the character, then that goes into design, you know, an absolute shout out to Amelia Vidal, who's our lead character designer, her and her team, they work really hard to make sure we're going to do Storm's Mohawk this way. But, you know, based on the way the artist drew, depending on who drew her Mohawk, it was longer in the back, shorter in the back. Or so it's, you know, finding medium or middle grounds to help kind of appease everyone if you can, you know, or finding preference on what's easier for animation, you know, or to just draw in general. And then once we have a design figured out, or at least an idea roughed, then we can go into storyboards. And, you know, we're able to hook that up in the board. Or sometimes we don't have a design, and this isn't necessary for any one particular character, but there could not be a design yet. And so that's when we'll be like, well, we got the comics or the OG show, you know, we can do something. So it really, like everything on this show, it really takes a team when it comes down to getting the final look and final design of characters. But that typically, more often than not, falls into character design department.
Well, it looks fantastic to take it from the 90s and we're in 2024. It looks fantastic to look at. Another thing I want to talk to you about is the pacing. Is there a business aspect, you know, with the Motendo Life Death part? We definitely get that, which I thought was so cool to get that little snippet of like that 30 minute made you take you back to like Saturday morning cartoons or something. Is there a business aspect? Is it about the character? Just the way you're developing? How do you figure out the pacing? I know it takes a team to kind of put this together.
Well, I mean, again, pacing that comes from scripts. And to be quite frank, it comes from the OG show. People that are like, oh man, we go through a lot. We do, but that's because the OG show did that before us. There's a myriad of characters that we got to get through and they all have their own emotional arcs. So, you know, right. And the audience wants all of them. And so do we. So, as far as pacing, that's kind of been, you know, ingrained in stone more or less because of our predecessor, right? So and we're on their shoulders. We are a continuation, we are a revival, so we have to sort of follow suit. And you know, that's something that I really enjoyed about the scripts, because it forced us to be very cognizant of shot language and storytelling vision, you know, the visual aspect of the storytelling and translating scripts, you know, bringing stuff to life. It just, you know, it, every shot matters because we have to cover everything. So, you know, there can't really be wasted screen time. And so, yeah, that was one of the, at least for myself, you know, I'm working with my directors and, you know, our storyboard artists, just helping to match that pacing, you know, from the OG show, from script, into visual nature.
Yeah, and I love that old school, like, gaming look to every end of the episode is always cool to do. I wanted to kind of talk to you, like, a lot of the episodes have a lot of themes, and I know you're pulling from the comics and stories going forward. But if you think about, like, Nightcrawler coming back and or coming in episode 5, one of my favorite lines he said is, there's no love without sin. And I like how each episode just kind of hits you with that little nugget of wisdom. Do you guys already kind of have that pre-plan? I mean, I know it's done and over and you guys have the secret nugget to know how it's going to end. But was that something you started with? Did you go back to like the 90s to some of those themes? to kind of bring it forward and change it up a little bit?
Yeah, honestly, a lot of all that credit, you know, goes to Bo in the writer's room. That was, you know, stuff that, again, that's one of my personal favorite lines. And the rest of the line is, you know, for love is measured in what we forgive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To you know, add to your point, you know, that was, it's tricky, right? Because one of the things I really respected about, you know, the writers room and Bo and what they were doing is we don't have the amount of episodes that the original show did. We don't have that luxury. Everything has to slap and matter. And, you know, if we have a smaller run, everything has to matter. Every, you know what I mean? There's a little bit more picture in that. So to have those nuggets, to have words of wisdom, or to have something that goes, oh damn, I didn't know I needed to hear that, right? It's that's kind of by necessity, you know, and it's a necessity that, you know, Bo and the writers room absolutely delivered on. And when we have those staples, we are able to come in the visual aspect and just elevate it. It's just easier to elevate, you know, and there's a difference between having to get something to work and fix it and then to draw it. But it's another thing to get it, and it's already a level of good to where you could just embellish on it. So it's like the bar is already here when we came in. Well, we're used to usually having to fix the bar or do things over here. It's like, no, the bar came in when it's here, and when it leaves, it's already here. It's like, because everything just, you know, helps along the way. Every department, everybody brings something to the table to honor, you know, what the vision is overall. But, you know, it's that team effort of every department, everybody contributing to execute it.
Yeah. Well, listen, I like to use the word slap because it definitely slaps, and I'm here for the ride. I cannot wait to see where it goes. Thank you so much, sir, for the time.
Thank you so much. Hope you enjoy.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie, and I am your host along with Ryan. We are doing yet another recap of X-Men 97. Ryan, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, we're keeping it constant, you guys. Look at us. We're keeping on sticking to our word. We're keeping it going.
We're keeping it going. We're trying to keep this thing consistent. I'm very, very proud of us for doing that. I think that, you know, look, we're at the, what is it? Okay, I always say this word wrong. Penultimate episode.
There you go. Yep. Nailed it. No, you okay. Nailed it. You nailed it. Yeah.
The penultimate episode of X-Men 97, episode 5 recap called Remember It. And you're going to remember later on why that title is so significant. So this episode had me in my feelings. And I have to say up front, this is my favorite episode of the season so far.
Yes.
It really is. It's packed with so much drama, like melodrama. It's packed with like just this beautiful romantic arc. There's a lot of action, of course, which is what you'll get in X-Men 97. But this felt like Emmy-worthy television for me. It just really, the stakes were raised. There was a lot of tension. And we're going to dive right into it. But I really... You know, the writers really put their foot in this one with crafting together a really compelling narrative, and they deserve all of the awards for this. It's just so groundbreaking, some of the writing that was done in this episode called Remember It. So then let's get started. And by the way, I feel like this was also like an Avengers Endgame episode because there was a lot of deaths.
That's true. There
was a lot of mutant deaths, and I'm actually going to go through towards the end all of the characters that died in this episode. But before we even get started with the recap, just your overall thoughts, Ryan. What how did you feel about the episode? Do you feel as strongly as I do? As you know, like, was this also your favorite episode of all time, or maybe not? How did you feel?
I don't know if it was my favorite, but I second you in the fact that it was definitely well crafted. Like you said, shout out to the writers. You know, the voice actors have been killing the game. You know, it's just that it pulls on, like it hits everything. You got your good action scenes. You're crying all over the place. You're on the edge of your seat. The cliffhanger was dope. So, yeah, it's got all the elements that you need. So I definitely enjoyed it. You know, for me, anytime, we already talked about this, like I'm going to bring it up again. Anytime they put Storm on the screen, it's probably going to be my favorite episode. I'm just going to let y'all know that right now.
I know that's right.
But you know what? I'm not mad at episode 5. I'm not mad at Remember It. They did their thing on this one.
Well, I will say, because, you know, I always like to do a sneak peek to see what the episode titles are of X-Men 97. Next week's episode is titled Life, Death, Part 2. So looks like we will see Storm next week. So there you go. Excited. You'll get your Storm storyline next week. So, okay. We start off with a journalist by the name of Trish Tilby. She is interviewing members of the X-Men, which includes Beast and Cyclops. And Cyclops, his interview gets a little bit awkward because the topic shifts to, to the love story that's going on in his life with him and Jean Grey. And, you know, she's a journalist. She's got to get something a little sensational in her story. And they're talking about what's going on in their love life. And meanwhile, Jean is continuing to untangle her powers, her memories. And Logan is also comforting her in that process, which is very interesting because, as we know, and we've talked about throughout these episodes,
yep,
Logan still has a lot of repressed feelings for Jean, and that has not gone away. So Jean is sort of dealing with this, and she's very vulnerable, and she talks to Logan about it. And as she tells the story between what's going on with her and Cyclops, she kisses Logan. And Logan... Dun, dun, which, dun. You know, Logan, you would think that he would, you know, respond to the kiss and like, okay, this is his moment. But instead, he takes the high road and is like, this is not, we're not doing this. Because you're Jean, he's Cyclops. The rules are the rules. And you guys are married, you're a couple, and you're supposed to be together. And I'm supposed to be the lonely guy watching in the watching in the shadows and pining your love from afar. He didn't say that, but that's what he means by the rules are the rules. That's what his face said. That's what his demeanor was. So I'll stop there and get your thoughts. What did you think about that whole moment with Jean? And also the journalist asking Cyclops about his love life and getting into his business. And also Logan kind of walking away after Jean kissed him.
Yeah, you know, I loved adding the journalist in. And I was kind of doing like, you know, I got to catch up on my comics. But I was doing a deep dive on Trish, or maybe it's Patricia, I think, in the comics. And it seemed like she had a little thing going with Beast after he saved her. So I like how they had a little flirtation, little thing going there, and Beast turning red in the beginning. You know, it was giving me like Dateline plus Entertainment Tonight, right? When you bring in the drama. So I like how they brought her in to kind of go through and talk to the X-Men. Okay, now with Scott and Jean, boy, I'm telling you, Logan is right. They have, or Wolverine, they always have, like, it's part of the rules that they have to be together, right? But the trust issue is the thing with me, with the both of them. Like, it always seems to go back and forth. You know, I feel like sometimes they never on the same page, even though they always somehow end up gravitating towards each other. You know, for me, it's always about the X-Men movies. I went back to, if you think about X-Men Last Stand, you know, with Jean killed Scott, you know, when she was turning into the Phoenix, had the Phoenix power. It just feel like there's always this constant, like, however you play these characters, whoever plays these characters, it's always this constant fit where they're never, to me, on the same plane. It's never the same understanding when it comes between the both of them. But yeah, I don't know if they're going to figure out. Sometimes it's hard to watch. Sometimes I just wish I could like change the whole storyline and be like, go be with Wolverine. And it just be like that. Cause I'm just like, I feel so bad for him on the side. All the time. He's always a third wheel. And he's like, look, girl, don't use me as your rebound. Okay. I'm not your rebound right now. Okay. We know you're going to be with Scott. Them trying to kiss me is what I feel like the vibes Wolverine was giving. But I don't know. Sometimes I get a little tired of the whole Jean Scott thing, but I guess it is what it is. You know, I mean, they got legacy comics, so you know, we gotta play it out and see what happens. But yeah, it was hard for her. And Jamie, I'm sure you're gonna bring it up too. But I'm so curious of what you thought about, you know, he was kind of in like a love triangle, you know, bringing in Margaret, right? Madeline Pryor. Bringing her in, like she now he's in like a love triangle, so sort of speak, kind of. It's like, what did you think about them, like kind of bringing that back up or entering that back in? I mean, you know, obviously she's the baby mama, and it's in the comics, but it felt like a new thing. Yeah.
We'll get to that because yeah, that kind of happens later on too. But yeah, you're right. There is sort of like a love triangle now with Logan because Jean is a clone, right? So there's Madeline Pryor, there's Jean Grey, and then there's Logan, who he likes both of them, I guess, now. And then Cyclops also likes both of them. So then, yeah, we've got a love triangle between two women and a man, and then also Logan and Cyclops, and Logan, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Madeline. So this is getting really complicated. This is getting very complicated. Yeah. And it gets even further more complicated, which we're going to talk about in scenes that happen later on in this episode. But Cyclops is also interrogated by Trish about Nathan's birth. Like, Trish is really getting into their business. Like, girl, you know, slow your roll. But, you know, he's getting upset because it's about the circumstances around him abandoning his son. So there's just a lot of pent-up feelings and, you know, abandonment issues. And again, that's what I had said at the beginning of this episode, is like, there's a lot of melodrama happening in this episode that we just haven't really touched on. I guess we have touched on in previous episodes, but it's even heightened even more in episode 5 in Remember It. And I love it. So moving on, we see that Magneto and Gambit, they still don't like each other. They're in Blackbird, the new Blackbird. They're still kind of picking at each other. And you know, obviously Gambit has still got his feelings because Magneto has moved in on his woman. And from the plane, we can see the new temple of statues of Magneto and Professor X. So Magneto is now kind of like a deity in Genosha. So that is very interesting. But one thing is really cool that happened in this episode, and we have talked about this character in previous podcasts, my boo, Kurt Wagner, aka Nightcrawler, shows up. So he shows up in this episode and he befriends Rogue and Gambit to Genosha. And before I get too far ahead, I want to stop here and get your thoughts, because I just absolutely loved the appearance of Nightcrawler in this episode. He's everything I would have expected, and seeing how he's just so free-hearted, and I love the accent, and I love how he just teleports everywhere, where you look at him to your left and then he pops off and he's to your right, and you know, you don't expect him to be where he's supposed to be. And he's got a little bit of comic relief, but then he's also very suave and charismatic. So yeah, what did you think about Kurt Wagner's appearance, and also just the fact that Gambit is still got some biting feelings towards Magneto?
You know, Magneto, I guess I'll start with Magneto and Gambit. It's always hilarious to me, like, Rogue got these men in a chokehold, y'all. Like, she got these men trying to go at it. It doesn't matter, you know, like, they gonna be in life and danger, and they just fight to get this, you know, fight to get her to, like, choose me. So hey, Rogue, I ain't mad at you, girl. You know, keep it going, keep them on their toes. But, you know, as far as Nightcrawler, absolutely loved it. I was waiting for it. I remember, like you said, we talked about it before, that he was coming. You know, we're like, what is going to be the entrance? I love how they, you know, they hit us with that pop. Him coming, like, teleporting everywhere. You know, one time he's standing over here, next he's over here. The lines are very quick and witty, like you said. I love how he says that line to Gambit of "There's no love without sin." I love how he was just like hitting all the notes and just moving throughout the episode was just so cool. And you know, like you say, it's a good time because it's like his timing is perfect. He feels right with the X-Men when he can kind of mingle with them and get along. And I like that he has like this position helping out the council in the way he does. So yeah, it was very perfect how they entered Nightcrawler.
And Adrian Howe, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, is the same voice actor that voiced Nightcrawler in the animated series. So just wanted to throw that little tidbit out there. So yeah, you know, Nightcrawler has not changed. He's consistent with the Nightcrawler that we know. And again, you know, my boos are in this episode. We got Gambit, we got Nightcrawler. Okay, bring on the boos. So Nightcrawler in this episode, he befriends Rogue and Gambit. There's some really funny moments, but he befriends them to go to Genosha. And Genosha has become like this mutant utopia. Yeah, it's actually like this really cool place that's inhabited with other mutants. And we see Leech, and we also see Dazzler. And Dazzler looks a little different than she does in the comics. She has like this short red hair, and Rogue is sort of like dazzled by her. In the comics, from what I remember, at least in the early 90s, she has like this long, I think it was like more strawberry blonde hair, but I remember it being more blonde, but I think strawberry blonde was accurately what her hair color was. But you know, that's why a lot of people were saying maybe Beyonce should play her, blah blah blah. But
what can you imagine? Oh my god,
that's Woo! What that was the sentiment out there, that Beyonce should play Dazzler. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
can you, like, the explosion that would happen for the X-Men if you get Beyonce to like voice or whatever she's gonna do? Like, the explosion that would happen in that world, like in Marvel, would be insane.
I mean, and somebody threw out, and I mean, I'm fine with Beyonce, but somebody threw out Taylor Swift, and I mean, I'm not mad at that either. So,
I feel like it could go. Dazzler got people thinking it could go either way.
Basically, Dazzler's just a singer. She doesn't really have any other powers other than to sing. So anyway, so we see her, we see Leech, who, you know, love Leech of the Warlocks. So it's this cool mutant utopia. And then Nightcrawler in this scene, which you mentioned that great line that he says, he notices that there is some chemistry between Gambit and Rogue. And he even suggests at one point that he should marry her. And, you know, what was it? Gambit said that love is for sinners or something.
He's that guy. He's like, for me, you know, that I'm a sinner, I never can find love like that. You know, basically, like, he's like, he's a bad boy. He doesn't settle down like that.
And then that's when Kurt said that there is no love without sin.
Yeah.
That is a great line. That is a great line.
Yeah, I love that. I thought it was that. And I love how he, like, grabs him. He's like, Americans, you're so funny. When, you know, when Gavin's talking about, oh, I can't, what are you talking about? I can't marry her. What do you mean?
So that was just a great moment to see again, like, the relationship. First of all, just seeing how Kurt is trying to console Gambit in that moment, but also seeing Gambit's insecurity about who he is, who he is to Rogue, how he feels about Rogue. So we're really unpacking some character development. That's my favorite term when we do these podcasts. but we're really unpacking the, you know, and really unpeeling the layers of Remy's character here, which I really just find really compelling. So Genosha's Council, which we see later, Genosha's Council, which also includes Nightcrawler, what they're doing is they're helping Genosha's various religion religions. This council assembles and it's composed of Emma Frost, which we know Emma Frost. We remember her from the movies as well, the live action movies. She's also been in the animated series. Moira, I can never say her name right. Moira McTaggart. It's easier to read these than say them.
Yeah.
Sebastian Shaw. Mm-hmm. And they question whether or not Magneto is ideal to be Genosha's chancellor. He agrees to accept the position as long as Rogue rules as his queen. So listen, Magneto, what is your ulterior motive here? Like, really, what is your thing with Rogue? Is it a romantic thing? Is there a power dynamic that you have with Rogue? I'm still not sure, because I don't know if he really has romantic. I mean, maybe he does, but are those his motives 100% that it's romantic, or does he really want like a queen? Is it a monarchy thing? So yeah, what did you think about these moments?
Yeah, I mean, that's why Magneto, for me, has always gotten on my nerves. Like, whether you talk about films, comics, however you want to put it. Because for me, he's never somebody that you can pin down. I always have this hidden, you know, just like fear that he's going to do something to mess something up. Like, he'll be all right for a while, and he's going to do something to mess it up. And it's like, I can't shake it. I try to get into it. You know, he's been doing good so far. But it's like, it's in the back of my head all the time. And then when he pulls in Rogue, I'm like, to me, I don't know. It feels like it's some a little bit of infatuation. You know, maybe he finds her sexy because it's like Rogue don't really back down. You know, she got that Omega kind of power, you know, that it's something captivated about it. But he also, it's Magneto. So he also wants somebody that could be that queen, you know, that leader to you know, really impress the council, right? Like, they're not really buying him. But Rogue, you know, she got some good clout behind her. So to have both of them, you know, like on the council together, I think kind of gives him where he's playing the middle to me. Like, it could be this, like, he's infatuated with her, he likes her, but he also likes that power dynamic that I think Rogue can bring him. But my man Magneto is always think he has Rogue pegged when he never does, is my thing. So I think that's when he, as soon as he made that announcement, I was like, boy, he about to get himself in trouble with this one. But I could see that pull, right?
I think you're onto something. I think he's more attracted to power than he is to Rogue. Like, the fact that he knows that Rogue is attracted to him because he's immune to her mutant power, and that she's vulnerable because she doesn't have the ability to be intimate with any other man other than him. He's attracted to that. He knows that he has power over her in that way. So I don't even think it's about him being interested in her romantically. He's interested in the power that he has over her.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Magneto, you're such a douche.
Stop being a douche, Magneto.
You are such a douche.
And it's like, and it's hard too, because like, and I know you're going to slowly bring us into it, but he had some moments in this episode where it's like, you have faith in him, but then that's that douche that still comes from the side, and you like, did he really mean it? Like, is it really who he is? Like, do we fall for it or what?
He is by far one of the most complex characters in the Marvel universe. I will say that for certain. He is very complex, and that's the beauty of the way Marvel creates these characters, and specifically X-Men. These characters are just so nuanced and, you know, diverse and complicated and layered, and there's so many gray areas. And that's what I love. It's just like, one minute you love them, one minute you hate them, one minute you want to be their best friend, the next minute you're like, oh my gosh, stay away from me. So you want to throw the comic book and just be like, what are you doing? So that's why I've you know, fallen in and out of love at moments with the X-Men throughout the years. So Jean and Scott, they reminisce about Nathan, only for it to be Madeline who is actually communicating with Scott. And Scott tells the real Jean that he's been psychically speaking to her for a month. Jean, so follow me here, okay? So, you know, Scott is thinking that, or Jean rather, is thinking that Scott has been having this conversation with her when actually he's been having conversations with Madeline. So Jean is mad that Scott has basically been cheating on her telepathically with Madeline. And he's like, well, she's my baby mama. What do you expect me to do? And she's like, well, do you love her? And he's like, well, I love the both of you. So there's complexity because, yeah, you know, he's trying to still forge this relationship with Madeline, who is the mother of his son, who he still wants to have a relationship with. But then he's also with Jean, who he loves. And Jean, in the present day, Jean is with him. And she's concerned because he's communicating telepathically with Madeline. And Jean doesn't have, you know, any kids with him. So they don't have that same kind of bond. So she kind of feels some type of way about Scott communicating with Madeline. So it is a very complex relationship dynamic between the three of them. And yet again, this is such great writing here. It's like you're cheating. You're kind of like telepathically cheating on your wife with your baby mama. Like that is such an interesting storyline. So I'll stop there because that's a lot to unpack there. And hopefully I've articulated that to our listeners where you're following along. I'm assuming that you've already seen the episode, so you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, go ahead, Ryan.
yeah, we're following you. I don't know. It just sounds like your typical X-Men problems to me. You know what I mean? Like the whole, you got the, you know, telepath, you know, you got your baby mom over here, you know, you got your wife right here. They going through, I don't know. You know what? Let me just go ahead and just say, Scott, I feel for your brother, okay? I'm going to give him a little bit of sympathy because usually, you know, Scott, he be playing too much and he be doing a lot, but I'm going to give him a little bit of sympathy in this episode because he missing his son. He all over the place. He, you know, he freaks out in the interview and it's like, dude, you're supposed to be keeping it cool right now. Like, we're trying to, you know, but, you know, he's kind of emotionally just all over the place. So maybe that kind of excuses his thing going on with Madeline where he thought, you know, like Jamie explained well, that he was talking to Jean and they were working through their issues, you know, that it was actually Madeline. Cause you know, like Jamie said, it is the baby mama. Like, what you going to do? Like, you know, she's going to be there even though, you know, she went to Genosha. She's still going to be in the picture, right? Like there's no way for you to completely erase that or his feelings that he would have for her. But yeah, I mean, it's just super awkward. Cause it's just like, you know, Jean has been off, you know, the way Sinister played this, you know, technically she has like a son or a stepson, but she doesn't really know because he got snatched before she really got to talk to him. You know what I mean? So it's the craziest thing. It's like, usually if you get in a relationship with somebody that has a baby mama and a kid, you already know this stuff, right? Like you don't find it out while you're trying to figure out what you remember at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, I don't know. It's definitely like, they definitely upped the drama for this episode. I don't know what Jean's going to do.
It's the most dramatic episode. It's the most high drama, melodramatic. I mean, it's something out of like a daytime soap opera.
It's crazy.
But it's not like, and when I say daytime soap opera, because then you think, okay, well, you know, a little bit campy or whatever, but it's not like campy soap type stuff. Yeah. It's like Game of Thrones dramatic kind of, you know, level. I think I said this before, like this is Emmy worthy kind of drama, like Succession type drama. I find it so intriguing. And this is something that I've, you know, this storyline, which I'm not that familiar with this particular storyline out of the comics, but this is just fascinating to me. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. The whole cheating telepathically thing, and then this sort of back and forth between Jean Grey and Madeline and Scott is amazing. And then throw Logan in there. He's got his issues. I mean, you could literally create like a show just around these four.
Right, exactly.
So Rogue visits Gambit, who's suiting up for this gala that's coming up, and tells him about her romantic past. So she comes clean about Magneto. Kind of been building up a little bit because she's been sort of keeping this secret for quite some time throughout the episodes. And she finally comes clean about her romantic past with Gambit, which she eventually was broken up over his trauma. And Rogue argues that, you know, she can never truly be with Gambit. And he agrees, you know, like, you're right. We can't really be together. And he decides that, you know, we're going to be friends. And I personally was really heartbroken over this moment because I was just like, okay, this kind of solidifies the fact that they're going to be in the friend zone, you know? So this is that phase of their relationship where they've come to terms with the fact that it's just going to be what it is. So I'm just going to stop there because that's a very important moment where, you know, both Rogue and Gambit have decided, okay, you know, it is what it is. Rogue has decided she's, I guess at this point, romantically going to move on to someone else. Gambit has decided he's going to back off romantically from Rogue and that the two mutually are going to be friends.
Yeah. Well, you know, before we start crying to get out the tissues, because that was definitely a rough one right there. Can we talk about the fit of Gambit's suit?
When he was in the suit? Yes.
I was like,
he's looking fine. Per usual. whether it's a crop top or a suit.
Exactly. I was like, okay, Gambit. All right. I ain't mad at the suit. I just had to point out his fashion real quick because I was not expecting that when he was sitting in the chair doing something. He's sitting up doing something. He had the playing cards and everything. And I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting the suit. But yeah, I second what Jamie has said about Gambit and Rogue. It's just a hard one. And we all know, you know, they got so many paths and different ways they go into comics and everything. And you know, right now at this moment, it's looking pretty, it's pretty bleak because it's like she can't touch him. Like, you know, no matter what happens, you know, as part of her powers, they can't really have that, like, and, you know, he mentions a couple of times, you know, it's more than just skin deep, you know, what they have. You know, like, he seems like, you know, right now, Gambit seems like he's all in no matter what. You know, even though he cannot physically touch Rogue, it seems like he's always going to be there for her. He's full in 100%. But Rogue is like, you know, as you know, that's the normal feelings that you would come up. You want to be able to kiss and hug your boyfriend, you know, without having to have on gloves and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's like she can't have that connection that she would have, you know, with Magneto, whether Magneto's trying to use her or not. That's still that boundary that she could cross with him that she can't do with anybody else, you know, without hurting them. So, I mean, she's having some real things that she's going to have to, like, grapple with. Do you go with your heart and just, like, you know, from a distance, you know, we're never going to have that deep connection like that, you know, physically, but, you know, I'm in love with you. Or do you go with, like, you know, what's more practical in your eyes, I guess, you know, you could help out the council, you know, you and Mag, you know, you're not, you can't hurt Magneto physically. So I don't know. I feel for her. I don't know what, I was sitting like watching the episode, like, what would I choose? I mean, Gambit was looking fly, but it's like, what are you supposed to do? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, what would you choose in that moment? I don't know. Like, that's a tough one.
I mean, you bring up so many interesting and really good points. And it's such a sad story, and heartbreaking. But again, I know I keep using the same words. It's just so intriguing and compelling to me. Like, yeah, the fact that this is a story around the fact that you've got this couple who have this really great kinetic energy, kind of like, you know, pun intended, but they have this great kinetic energy between the two of them. They're really right. Good friends, but they also are very attracted to one another. And had Rogue not be in the situation where she had these kind of powers, I'm certain that they would be in a relationship. I'm certain they would be in a, you know, Jean Grey, Scott Summers kind of relationship where they probably would be married and, you know, maybe even have a family at this point. But because Rogue is who she is, they could never have that kind of union. And it's heartbreaking because she really does, in my opinion, I mean, at this point, and I'll just say in my opinion at this point, I feel like she is in love with Gambit. And I feel like Gambit is in love with her. And the fact that, you know, she wants to have the kind of love that many humans and, you know, in mutants as well, are able to have, that she has to settle for Magneto, which sucks. I mean, Magneto of all people, you know, like it's a bummer because, you know, Gambit is the guy that she should really be with. So yeah, it really is a heartbreaking story. And, man, this is just such great writing. Just really great writing.
They got us on the edge of our seat. It's crazy. And you can't believe it's like, I mean, you can go back to like reminiscing, you know, like to the first X-Men 97, you know, like back in the 90s, but you can't believe you're looking at this 2D animated TV show and you feel like this, right? Like you're literally like, it's crazy. It's just like the level of drama. Mm-hmm. You know, the action that's going on, like you don't feel like sometimes you can get animation and sometimes things are lost, but they're like hitting every note, which is so cool about this.
And I mean, I'm saying like the writing is so good as if I haven't read about this years ago, like during, especially because I read back in the day, back in the Chris Claremont run of X-Men, mm-hmm. like this whole storyline. But, you know, that was years ago when I was a kid. So a lot of this stuff is just being like, you know, rebirthed in my right. little kid mind back from back then. But you're right. Like, and I know probably folks that are listening, especially like anime fans are like, guys should watch anime. Cause
right.
that
yeah,
anime
yeah.
ain't got nothing on this. And you guys are right. But I don't watch a lot of anime. But this, it's been a long time since an animated show has moved me the way this episode has moved me. So I'm just really amazed at what they've done, how they've crafted this show the way they have so far in these first five episodes, and just sort of the way they've raised the stakes in episode five. And I can't wait to see, you know, how it continues to build up and what we end up getting with the season finale. So yeah, it's absolutely amazing television for an animated series.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the gala takes place and Dr. Cooper's in her feelings because Magneto was, she's not happy right now because Magneto was chosen as Genosha's leader. And Rogue shows up at the gala. And by the way, we hear Ace of Base's Happy Nation playing in the background, yeah. which that was my jam back in the day. I don't know, Ryan, you might be a little too young to remember.
Yeah,
that.
You know, I had to do a little Amazon, you know, a little Apple Music search, you know,
did
check
you,
it out a little bit.
Did you have to use the Shazam app on your phone?
Yeah, I Shazammed it, you know, real quick, you know what I mean?
that was Ace of Base. Ace of Base had some really great songs. My favorite Ace of Base song was The Sign. I was playing that song on repeat back in the late 90s. But anyway, Happy Nation was playing in the background and that just took me all the way back. I love the fact that this show just goes hard because it is X-Men 97. So
yeah,
they just really go hard for 90s nostalgia because last episode we saw a console that looked exactly like a Sega Genesis. So yeah, just props to the folks that are mm-hmm. doing the world building around 90s nostalgia. So yeah, Happy Nation is playing in the background and Rogue is there looking good. She looks so cute. And yes. she kind of has a 90s moment, you know, that was a 90s moment where, you know, she's on, there's the music plays And then everybody turns around.
Yeah.
And she's there coming down the stairs, you know, on the dance floor. And, you know, everybody's looking at her because it kind of reminds me of the moment, even though this was in the 80s, like in Teen Witch, where she comes out, you know, and they're playing this music. So anyways, so everyone's looking at how fabulous she looks. And then she and Magneto, they dance while being able to touch each other. And, she has this connection with her, with Magneto that, you know, unfortunately she couldn't really have with Gambit. I mean, at least in a physical sense. Definitely not in an emotional sense. So I'll stop there. And yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on just that moment.
Yeah. Oh, can I bring up one thing before we really dive into this, to the gala scene, like my thoughts on the gala scene. Have you noticed? So everybody on social media was pointing this out. Did you notice like the watcher in the sky as they got into the gala scene? Have you seen people pointing that out?
No,
it was like a little shadow. It was like I had to go back and really rewind and like pause it. But people are talking about like this possible connection, you know, between the What If series and this one. So I was wondering, because I didn't know if I had to go back and look, because I didn't even know. It was like right as the fireworks start, as the gala is starting, like there's like this blue sky and you see the fireworks, you know, as you go into the gala, and there's like the outline of the watcher.
Uh-oh,
and I didn't even notice it before.
Well, then,
but yeah, so you guys let us know. I don't know if Jamie's trying to see, you know, if you got the episode out.
Yeah, I do see some stuff online that the watcher is in the sky. He can be seen on the upper left hand corner as the fireworks go off. Okay.
And I thought that was so crazy. I was like, I had to go back because I saw people talking about it. And I was like, how did people, it's like the detail that people are catching these Easter, I don't know if it's supposed to be Easter egg or not. And it just happens that we're just seeing this or whatever, but it's crazy.
And by the way, in that scene with Rogue and Magneto, they share a kiss, you know, which is kind of a big deal for Rogue because she hasn't kissed anyone since she kissed a boy, and the boy like basically had to go into a coma. That was in the comics.
Yeah, that poor boy in a coma. But yeah. Going back to just you know, Magneto, and I like James, the Rogue entrance was fabulous. I love how she came in with the dress and everything. I love, you know, you got to go back to some of your old, like what, sitcoms or whatever, like the movies in the 90s and see that dramatic entrance that I love that she gets to have with the music and the floating and everything like that. You know, like it's a good, like over the top dramatic X-Men party, like gala scene, right? Like only the X-Men can pull off this gala like this. You know, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like for a minute I was buying the romance between Rogue and Magneto, but we always know he got another motive. And I like how after the kiss, I like how she stops him and she's like, you know what? Remy is right. You know what I mean? Like, cause for a minute we thought she was going to go with it. We were like, she was like, you know, maybe she's going to accept this queen role. You know, she's going to help him, you know, cause this can have benefits for her too. Stepping into that queen role, you know, besides the fact that she could touch Magneto, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see her kind of back off. Like, I mean, you know, she has these urges, you know, it's natural, but at the same time, she's like, now, wait a minute. I really love this guy. I don't know if I can really be happy in this position. And we can all, and I feel like with Rogue, she definitely goes with her heart 100% of the time.
Oh, so yeah.
I think that's one of the things to love about her, that she's always going to put that on forefront. Like, even though her mind may be going a million miles a minute, you know, she's always going to lead with her heart, which I love about her character. So, yeah, I mean, I absolutely love how she ended it. You know, Magneto look like, his face was like, what? And I like how he, like, tried to push away to kind of get to her quickly and everything. It's just like, it was so funny just kind of seeing him get played a little bit in that sense, even though we know, you know, he might have some other stuff going on, but it's like he was, you know, a little dotty. Like, he's like, oh, I got to get to her. That's my woman up there. And then she's like, I was just getting a little quick kiss and a little hand touch, but it ain't really going any further than that. So I like that scene was definitely well paid in the gala.
Well, everything from the gala looks like it's going fine until it's not so fine. We hear a voice, and it's Cable, and he's from the future, and he knows that there is a Sentinel attack that is about to happen. He's actually pulled back from the future before he can help them. And Madeline is actually Madeline, who is his mom, Madeline Pryor. Cable, by the way, is Nathan Summers, for those who don't know the connection. So Madeline is shot by a psychic blast. You know, he apologizes to her and disappears. So, you know, unfortunately, he's not able to save folks in that moment. Suddenly, the gala is attacked by a giant sentinel, and Rogue, Gambit, and Magneto, they work to fight it off, but they're unable to do so without freeing the Morlocks first. They make it to the Morlocks, and Magneto protects them, even as the sentinel prepares to try to obliterate them. So I'm going to stop there because there's a lot of stuff that's going on at this point. So what did you think about Cable? We see him for the first time coming back from the future, and he tries to save them. But
I don't know. Don't you hate that when they do that in all these superhero things? It's like the person is right there to save the day, and then they can't, like, the time, like, they don't have enough juice and the and whatever, you know, mechanism they're using to keep them there long, and they got to go right back and maybe try it again and see what happens the next time. But I don't know. I think everybody, you know, obviously everybody knew Nathan was going to make it, you know, Cable. We were expecting this Cable appearance. But, you know, I guess it's good for Madeline to have that moment where she's like, oh, okay, everything's okay. He, my son made it. You know, he's good. So I guess we needed that kind of little, you know, moment. Also, I was trying to figure out, I guess that was preempting, like, what was going to happen. But, you know, with her nosebleed and, you know, like the, you know, getting hit, like, I guess both her and Jean were having like some kind of, I guess, I don't know if it'd be a headache is not the right word, but they were getting, I guess, like you said, like a psychic blast with both of them at different times. And I don't know if that was like severing a connection or something between the both of them. I don't know what was happening with that, but it was just interesting to see her, because she first left with that nosebleed, you know, that's what brought her outside before Cable did show up, you know, like, unfortunately, you know, he didn't show up in enough time to save anybody. But right. I don't know. I feel like it's some Easter eggs in there that they're trying to throw us. Like something was going on. That was a little,
I feel like it's, you know, a crazy. The nosebleed is a sign that it's a signal that something bad is going to happen.
Got it. Okay.
That's what I think it meant. I could be wrong, but feel
okay.
Free,
all right. Yeah, I was kind of wondering what was going. Yeah, I was kind of. I was like, that's a little strange. But yeah, okay. So yeah, I was kind of wondering what they were adding in on that one, but. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if Cable's going to keep popping in and out. I wonder if we'll see him maybe not the next episode. It might have something else to do, but, you know, I wonder if he's going to show up again, like, oh, maybe I can reverse this and maybe he can help us out a little bit, because it gets crazy. Once the Sentinel goes, like, the number of X-Men that are going down, they look like maybe hopefully they just knocked out some of them, but it looks pretty bleak.
I'm sure they're going to do, like, another Days of Future Past storyline. Yeah. Where we see him, and then obviously we'll get Bishop coming back as well, because Bishop and Cable also work together, and then, you know, hopefully we get some X-Force action going on.
Hey, bring it in.
So then, yeah, things get a little bit crazy towards, because now we're getting to the tail end of the episode. These Godzilla-like Sentinels, it's like a tri-Sentinel. I don't know, they're all sort of like fused together. Yeah. They zero in on the Morlocks. Did I call them Warlocks earlier? I feel like I did. I don't know why.
I didn't notice it, so I'm gonna call you good for now.
Okay, well, hopefully I didn't call them Warlocks, and if I did, I apologize, because I am jet lagged all the hell from 4 days of CinemaCon, lots of drinking and being in Vegas. So hey, I apologize.
Vegas will do that to you. That's why you know, what happened in Vegas, stay in Vegas, but it'll do that to you. You know what I mean?
You know, Vegas will do that to you. So being with the Morlocks and trying to save them, the tri-Sentinel, Godzilla-like Sentinels, which they're very much, you know, at this point, they're nearly indestructible. If you're a mutant and you try to attack them, it's imminent death. And Magneto, he becomes really angry, just like in his childhood when he sees that these tri-Sentinel, Godzilla-like Sentinels are trying to zero in on the Morlocks, because they're, you know, they're weak. They're not these, first of all, they're not really a threat. And they're weaker mutants. Magneto and the Morlocks seemingly looks like they are killed by the Tri-Sentinel. And then Magneto promises Leech that he doesn't need to be scared, which this was just like, I was getting into my feelings. And they disappear. Gambit then, he gets angry and he runs towards the Sentinel as it nearly zaps the entire island, and he gets stabbed on the side by one of its like tendrils. And Gambit uses his powers, like his kinetic energy powers, to zap the tendril into the entire side of the Sentinel. And there's this really great moment where he tells the Sentinel to, you know, my name is Gambit, remember it, which goes back to the title of this episode, which is called Remember It. And the Sentinel, the Tri-Sentinels rather, they, I don't know if they explode or implode, but they're impacted by his kinetic force, and they ended up being, you know, what's the word?
I mean, it looked like an explosion the way they zoomed out on the TV, because it, like, you know, everything looked like it was just burnt. Like, everything looked like it was just gone, like, wherever they were standing at.
Yeah, yeah. They're ultimately destroyed.
Yeah.
So, and then going back to Magneto, Magneto pretty much ended up being killed. It looks like he got killed trying to save the Morlocks. Then we see Rogue running over to Gambit because it looks like Gambit had sacrificed himself to kill the Tri-Sentinels. And then she cries and she says that she can't feel him.
Aww.
And that ended the episode. So yeah, Ryan, what did I leave out? Hopefully I didn't leave out anything. If I did,
no, you got it. No, you got everything, man. It was just, whew, it was mad, crazy fight to the end. It was just super sad. Yeah, I mean, and that's what, you know, going back to Magneto one more time here, that's what we're talking about, right? Like, he's giving these douchey moments at the beginning. And then all of a sudden, you know, he remembers he kept a promise, right, to Leech. And he's like, I told him he didn't have to worry, so I'm going after him. You know, he's like, okay, I'm going to use all the powers I got, so we can save as many people as we can, because we can't, you know, we can't lose like this. Like, we got to go down fighting. So, you know, that's another one. That's like a redeemable quality of Magneto, right? Like, he's always going to fight for the X-Men. He's going to go hard. So, you know, that's, you know, you give him like half a point, right, for that. So it was interesting seeing him go through that. It was also interesting, you know, when you get down to those final seconds, seeing Rogue's reaction to what he was doing, you know, because she'd already made it clear, like, hey, I'm going to stick with Gambit, you know, whatever that means in their world, and, you know, in the Rogue and Gambit world at that point. And, you know, you can see that they kind of make that connection, and she's like, don't you do it, Eric, don't you do it, because she knows what's getting ready to happen, or how he's getting ready to sacrifice herself. So it's interesting to kind of see her, you know, up until the very last second, she's still kind of caught in between these two guys, you know, where she's pretty much let go of Magneto, but she's like, at the same time, I mean, I don't want you to sacrifice yourself, like, I still need you to be here. You know, so it's crazy. Her emotions are probably in there. Go ahead, Jamie.
No, you're right. Oh, yeah. I mean, we see her eyes are like water fountains.
Yeah.
Where she's crying for Eric. She's crying for Remy. And she ends up running to Remy when he sacrifices himself for the Sentinels to get rid of them. And it's so sad because, you know, she's caught up in all of these mixed emotions between her love for Remy LeBeau and then sort of her allegiance to Eric now with this new political position that she's in, and also these mixed emotional feelings because she can now touch him and she kissed him. And so, and then this happens. So I felt really bad for Rogue in this moment. I'm like, damn. You know, she can't even have a boo right now.
Both of the boo, and they like second, like, oh yeah, that's bad. That's bad. It seemed like in a luck trade, or both people are trying to sacrifice themselves.
Yeah, you lost two boos in like seconds. What in the world?
This is the worst relationships I've never seen. Yeah, this is pretty
rough. Yeah. My God. So it's tough. So we suffered a lot of losses in this episode.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, it was like an end game because so Madeline Pryor, she becomes kind of like a victim of the first ambush when the mutants, while they were celebrating like their coalition, there's a mutant called Banshee who got incinerated by the Sentinel blast in the sky. A mutant called Marrow, who was also killed in that same blast. Moira, again, I can never say her name. Moira McTaggart, she also may have died because we see that she's sort of like laid down and she's bloodied. And then Squid Boy's body is next to hers. Sebastian Shaw also may be dead. He's laid down covered in blood. Callisto, we see her pupils and her eyes kind of fades and get really small, which happens when you die. The Morlocks are taken out and they succumb to the Godzilla Sentinels. And, Magneto. The Godzilla Sentinel said Omega level threat eliminated. So. Yeah. That happened. And then last but not least, Gambit went out like a G by supercharging that rod that was impaled in his body, blows up the Sentinel. Yeah, it was
Nightcrawler. We don't know. I mean, I'm assuming he's okay because he kind of was jumping when he got hit. So maybe maybe he was just knocked out for a little bit.
Yeah. Hopefully he's okay. I don't think he suffered any fatalities in this one. So I think we'll be okay with Nightcrawler. Yeah. I don't think there's any other X-Men that were involved in this skirmish, so everybody else is okay. But yeah, it was a rough episode.
Yeah,
it was rough.
Yeah, and I can talk about how Scott was like when they were watching the TV, and she was like, you know, no matter how you feel, Tris came back on as a reporter, and she was like, no matter how you feel about what's going on right now, these images are disturbing. Scott comes in like, what? Tell me how many are there? I'm like, Scott, come on now. I just like, at the moment, I'd be like, Scott, just sit down. Like everybody else is devastated. He's like, tell me how many.
Yeah. I'm like, what difference does it, I mean, I guess maybe to some extent, but like, just focus on the fact that you just need to console your team and be a leader for your team right now. Like, it sounds like he's freaking out.
Yeah. He was like doing the most for me right there in that scene. But I just remember thinking about that. Like, you see Beast and everybody else, you know, trying to pull it together and think about like really come to terms. And he's just like, give me the news, give me the details. Like, I mean, you kind of looking at it on TV. I mean, we don't really have anything right now. Like, I don't know what kind of update you want. But, and also too, I thought it was interesting because we're always talking about how they're changing up, you know, like how the episodes end with like the, you know, title cards, the little things, intricacies they make in the episodes. The theme song seemed like it was slowed down and more somber toward the end of this episode, which I thought was an interesting touch, like just to pay that much attention to detail as you like end it to really bring it home.
They did that on Game of Thrones too, I remember. Mm-hmm. So they do that on some TV shows whenever there's like a death or a really dramatic shift in tone with the story. So yeah, you know, they're writing this show like they're writing a dramatic TV series, and I'm here for it.
Okay,
I just hope that this series gets recognized and not just seen as, oh, this is just an animated show for kids. Who cares? Like, no, this is real groundbreaking television.
It is
up there with all of those other shows. It's up there. I'm sorry. It's up there with Succession. It's up there with The Last of Us. It's up there with Game of Thrones. It's up there with those, you know, quality of type of shows. It's up on, in those ranks. And it should be respected as such. I believe I saw online, and I need to read into it more because I only saw bits and pieces as I've been traveling. I haven't been able to be in tune online much about X-Men 97 because I was avoiding spoilers, but I thought I saw that people are trying to get the former showrunner, what is his name? Bo DiMaio?
Yeah, Bo DiMaio, yeah.
Yeah, that they're trying to get him back on the show.
Yeah, I read, I was curious about that too, because I read, you know, him being like a head writer and everything. I read that he already worked on season two, but for some reason exited at the very beginning of the season, like before, like he didn't go to the premieres or anything, but it's not being like revealed, you know, what exactly happened, you know, like after he's worked on both these shows, you know, and he's got to have something to do with, you know, a lot of the direction and how they decided to go. And all of a sudden he's disappeared. Like he's just, I don't know if it was being fired. Like they haven't really given, like, you know, obviously, you know, people reaching out to Marvel, different news outlets reaching out to Marvel. If you guys want to take a look and Google and figure out some of the stuff. But I think Deadline was one of the ones that reported on it too. Like maybe Hollywood Reporter has a little bit on it too, but it's just, it's mysterious just how he just, you know, he kind of just disappeared after, you know, as soon as the show was getting ready to premiere after doing all this work. So, and, you know, talks that he had ideas, you know, for season three, like he was going in, he was going hardcore on it. So I'm curious to figure out if, you know, if we ever figure out exactly what happened.
Well, the only thing that recently has gone on with him is he's recently spoken publicly, but only about the show. He talked about this very last episode and, you know, just talking about the reason why some of the events happened the way they did. And like specifically about the deaths of the characters and the threat of what happened to what happened in Genosha and with what happens to Gambit and Magneto and the pain of real life attacks and safe spaces. So he actually has this conversation publicly with the media about this episode. So that's the only thing that he's spoken publicly since the firing. But, you know, I thought I had saw something about like some sort of petition or something about people wanting to get him back on the show, but
yeah, he needs to. He definitely. I mean, I'll sign. He definitely. I don't know what the thing, but he needs to come back. Like I don't know what. Like, and then also, not only that, representation. You guys, like when I found out, I was just like, come. I was like, what is going on? Like, you know, it's that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about, where you need that behind the scenes. So I don't know. I'm hoping.
I mean, yeah, representation is important too, but also like I don't want it to be where we have this really great talented writer that crafted this great episode and series, and then they have somebody new in season two and we don't have that anymore. Like that's what, because it's already been greenlit for a second season.
Yeah,
so if all of that is lost, then it's kind of all for naught, because We've seen that before in other great television shows where they've had a great showrunner and then they leave the season one and then they bring in someone season two and then the show becomes trash. So,
it happens.
If X-Men 97, honestly, if they're smart, they probably might want to bring him back for season two if they want to keep the momentum and keep the same, you know, style of storytelling that this show has brought us so far. That's my opinion. So
yeah, I second that, because we don't know what he did, but I'm just saying, that's don't start saying. Messing with a formula that's working. I'm just saying, like, don't start, because we already know, like Jamie said, we already know now. It's been a lot of shows where that happens. You get to that second season, that third season, they try to mix it up and it's not the same show that you were watching before, and you like, why would you do that? When you see everything is vibing right, all the pieces are in place, why would you really shake it up like that going forward? So hopefully hopefully something that gets worked out.
Yeah, because like you said, I still don't 100% know what happened. So until I know he's done something like really terrible, like to the point where it's like, okay, it's illegal or something.
Right.
Then, yeah, we need to revisit having him back on the show for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let's all do some digging. We'll come back and let you guys know for the six. Maybe we can add that into our episode six and see what we see what we come up with. Keep an eye on it.
Indeed. Indeed. This was a fun Black Girl Nerds podcast episode to do because I just really enjoyed talking about this recap. Again, this was my favorite episode so far of the season. We've got five more because it's 10 episodes total. So we it's still not got...
I need some more.
I know. We're at the halfway mark. We're halfway there. But thanks for tuning in and listening to us. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.